Thank you very much, Jose, and thank you, Thomas, also for inviting me to this wonderful conference. And I got a request from the organizers to hand in my full text last Sunday, and I did, and I think so far I was the only one who did. And so here's my full text in order to facilitate the work of the translators. But of course, I don't have this text in my mind fully, so if you allow me, I will just read from my text. Otherwise, all this is useless. So this is work mostly joined with Rick van der Ploeg, who is at Oxford University. And this is based mainly on a review article in REAP together with Rick van der Ploeg. That paper appeared just a few months ago. So global warming is the consequence of the accumulation of CO2 in the atmosphere, and to a large extent the accumulation of atmospheric carbon results from anthropogenic emissions caused by burning a finite stock of fossil fuels. It also increasingly is caused by fossil fuel extraction processes itself, for example in the case of tar sands. Because emissions of greenhouse gases mix uniformly throughout the atmosphere, it doesn't matter where in the world CO2 emissions take place. Thus, the world faces a global negative externality. Because all countries benefit from fighting climate change, each country has an incentive to be a free rider, leaving the cost of combating climate change to other countries. This is an obstacle to successful climate policy. Another obstacle is that current generations have to make sacrifices to switch from using cheap fossil fuel to more expensive renewable energy. But the benefits of these sacrifices in terms of less global warming accrue to generations far in the future. These spatial and intergenerational obstacles may actually render climate policy counterproductive. The best way to fight global warming is to charge a price for the global warming damages caused by burning fossil fuel. The price should be set to the social cost of carbon, which is the present value of all current and future marginal damages to the economy of burning 1 ton of carbon today. The carbon price internalizes the global warming externality and can be achieved through either a global carbon tax or a global emissions permit market. Pricing carbon mitigates global warming by curbing fossil fuel demand because of increased energy efficiency, switching demand from relatively CO2-intensive fossil fuels to less CO2-intensive fossil fuels, substituting carbon-free renewables for CO2-intensive fossil fuels, locking more fossil fuel in the crust of the earth because the price of carbon makes it more costly to explore marginal oil and gas fields, increasing the attractiveness of capturing and storing and sequestrating CO2, which is a way to avoid paying the price for CO2 emissions, and moving the direction of technical progress from dirty to clean or green growth. All of these measures become attractive for private enterprises and households once a price for carbon has been implemented, because they cut CO2 emission charges. Pricing carbon thus incentivizes the economy to reduce CO2 emissions. If politicians fail to implement the appropriate price of carbon, climate change will be mitigated insufficiently, making climate adoption measures, for example, dikes in the Netherlands, necessary to better address the adverse effects of global warming. I will argue here that well-intended climate policies, such as a too rapidly increasing future carbon tax or subsidies on carbon-free alternatives, often yield outcomes that are below the social optimum. This is because such policies cause fossil fuel producers to fear that their assets will become worthless. In response, they pump fossil fuel more quickly, thereby accelerating global warming. This adverse short-run effect has become known as the green paradox, an expression first introduced by Hans Werner Sinn, here he is, in a paper published in 2008, and a book was following of that later on. It is important to make a distinction between several types of green paradoxes. A weak green paradox occurs if fossil fuel is extracted more quickly in the short run, and thus global warming accelerates in the short run in anticipation of a gradual tightening of climate policy. A strong green paradox occurs if the present value of the cost of global warming in terms of reduced output increases. And social welfare is private welfare, in our view, is private welfare minus green welfare. And of course, when evaluating climate policies, it's social welfare that matters rather than green welfare. So this then defines the super strong green paradox. And government failure can arise if either dirty fossil fuels, such as coal or tar sands, or renewables, such as solar or wind energy, are subsidized instead of putting a price on carbon. Government failure can also arise if national governments are unable to coordinate to implement a global carbon tax, which may cause carbon leakage, a spatial version of the green paradox. In the remainder of the talk, I will first discuss the hotelling rule for efficient extraction of fossil fuel and show how expectations about future climate policies can lead to the acceleration of global warming. I then show that stock-dependent extraction costs are essential for explaining how climate policy affects the optimal amount of untapped fossil fuel reserves. I then address substitutability issues and upward-sloping supply of renewables. I also discuss the challenges for climate policy raised by dirty fossil fuels such as coal and tar sands. I go into the role of market structure, and if I have time, I will discuss carbon leakage in more detail. And I will highlight at the end, hopefully, the role of innovation and how a breakthrough technology for renewable energy can lead to unintended fossil fuel increase, emissions from fossil fuel. Okay, a crucial concept in the theory of exportation of fossil fuels is the hotelling rule. It states that as long as the supply of fossil fuel is positive, the rent on fossil fuel, meaning the market price of fossil fuel minus the per unit extraction cost, will grow at a rate equal to the interest rate. The hotelling rule is based on the arbitrage condition that the return on keeping fossil fuel in the ground, the capital gains, must equal the return from taking it out of the ground, selling it, and getting a return equal to the interest rate. What is the relevance of this hotelling rule for green paradoxes? Let's look at the following picture. I begin by assuming that the cost of extracting one barrel of fossil fuel is constant. There is a carbon-free backstop, which is a perfect substitute for fossil fuel. And this backstop technology can be produced in unlimited amounts at a constant unit cost. This cost exceeds, of course, the unit extraction cost of fossil fuel. In the market economy, fossil fuel and renewables are never supplied at the same time because renewables are supplied at a constant price and the net fossil fuel price rises at the rate of interest. So fossil fuel use ends when the price of energy reaches the exogenous backstop price denoted by P upper bar. At that moment, the renewables take over. The timing of this transition from fossil fuel to renewables, as well as the initial energy price, follow from two conditions. First, demand as well as the energy price must be continuous. This means that at the time of the transition, the energy price must equal the cost of renewables. And second, total fossil fuel extraction up until the transition must equal the initial stock of fossil fuel. What happens if at some point in time before transition to renewables, the cost of the backstop is reduced from P bar to P bar prime? A new equilibrium will emerge with a new fossil fuel price path in the fossil fuel only phase. And the new price path for fossil fuel will lie below the old one throughout. This means that because total fossil fuel extraction still equals initial reserves, that the lower cost of renewables will move the date of the transition forward. And thus, fossil fuel extraction and carbon emissions will increase during the shortened fossil fuel only phase, thereby creating a weak as well as a strong green paradox. In the discussion of the hotelling rule and the green paradox so far, all oil is fully extracted unless the carbon tax or the renewables subsidy is prohibitively high. However, if stock-dependent extraction costs rise as more fossil fuel has been extracted and global warming damages rise at an increasing rate with the stock of atmospheric CO2, fossil fuel is possibly no longer fully extracted because the total cost of fossil fuel may eventually exceed the marginal cost of renewables. To illustrate, we assume that overall welfare equals the utility of energy use minus damages from climate change, minus expenditures on fossil fuel extraction and production of the backstop. Let us also assume that the emissions are proportional to fossil fuel use and that there is no natural decay of atmospheric CO2. The first best outcome maximizes social welfare under the constraint that cumulative fossil fuel extraction cannot exceed initial reserves. If at some point in time renewable energy is used, its marginal utility should equal its marginal cost. Similarly, if fossil fuel is used, its marginal utility should equal its marginal social cost. The marginal social cost consists of, first, the marginal cost of extraction, second, the scarcity rent, that it's the present value of all future marginal increases in extraction cost, and third, the social cost of carbon. Because the marginal social cost of fossil fuel is typically not constant, fossil fuel and renewables will never be used simultaneously in the first best outcome. Moreover, fossil fuel extraction will end at some future date with either full or partial exhaustion of the reserves. At the time of the transition to renewables, which is the start of the carbon-free era, the scarcity rent of fossil fuel is zero. Thus, in the case of partial exhaustion, the marginal cost of extracting the last unit of fossil fuel plus the social cost of carbon must equal the cost of renewable energy. This slide illustrates how the optimal amount of unexploited oil reserves can be determined. The horizontal axis indicates the fossil fuel stock that is left unexploited. The vertical axis indicates the per unit cost of emitted carbon. The downward sloping line represents the social cost of carbon. The more fossil fuel is left in the ground, the lower is the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere, and the lower is the social cost of carbon at the time of the transition, because everything is measured at the time of the transition. The upward sloping curve represents the production cost of renewables minus the unit extraction cost of fossil fuel. As more fossil fuel is left unexploited, it becomes more costly to extract another barrel, and the marginal damage of an extra ton of emitted carbon increases. So the difference between these costs increases. The optimal level of oil left in the ground is the point at which the two cost lines cross, provided the cost of oil is below the production cost of renewable energy. A lower rate of time preference increases the social cost of carbon and shifts out the downward sloping curve, so that more oil will be left in the ground. A more patient society will pursue a more ambitious climate policy and leaves more fossil fuel untapped. If extraction becomes more expensive for every stock of oil, the upward sloping curve shifts down, and thus more fossil fuel is locked in the ground, possibly all of it. And finally, an exogenous drop in the cost of renewables also shifts down the upward sloping curve, which leads again to more oil being left untapped and thus less accumulation of total atmospheric CO2. In the case of full exhaustion, it means an upward sloping curve that is already above the downward sloping curve initially. And if the production if the reduction in the cost of renewables is only marginal, then oil will still be fully depleted. Moreover, the transition to renewables will take place earlier because of the cheaper renewables. In this case, green welfare unambiguously deteriorates, but overall welfare decreases because the economy benefits from the lower renewable cost. If the cost of renewables is close to its lower bound, then the social cost of carbon will be small. If the cost of renewables is close to its upper bound, above which all oil is extracted, then the cost of carbon will be high. This suggests that climate damages will increase for renewable costs that are between these lower and upper bounds. The social optimum can be achieved in a market economy if the carbon price is indeed set equal to the Pigouvian carbon tax. If political factors prevent the carbon tax from being set optimally, there are several other possible outcomes. If it is optimal to fully exhaust the oil stock and the carbon tax also leads to full exhaustion, total CO2 accumulation will not be affected. Alternatively, if the carbon stock increases rapidly but starts from a low level, a too low level, there will be more carbon emissions initially and the transition to renewables will take place earlier, implying an acceleration of global warming relative to the first best outcome. However, then the transition will take place later if the carbon tax increases more gradually. Another possibility is that the suboptimal carbon tax will lead to more oil being left in the ground than in the first best case. However, generally, one can argue that a carbon tax that is close to the first best improves welfare relative to the no policy scenario. Another option is to subsidize renewables without taxing carbon, as politicians often prefer the carrot to the stick. If the subsidy is large enough, fossil fuel reserves are not fully exhausted, even if reserves are fully exhausted in the no policy scenario. There is then a weak green paradox because higher oil extraction occurs during the oil-only phase. The renewables subsidy shortens the oil-only phase so that more oil is left in the ground than without the subsidy, and thus carbon emissions will be lower in total. Hence, although the renewable subsidy accelerates global warming in the short run, there is less global warming in the long run. Whether there will be a strong green paradox depends, among other things, on the weight attached to present damages relative to future damages. I have now described a few basic insights from the theory of green paradox, but lots of additional contributions have been made, and time does not permit me to go into all of them, so I have to make a selection. So, I will try to talk about these issues, and I will start with an upward sloping supply curve of renewables. The well-known McKenzie greenhouse gas abatement cost curve provides marginal abatement cost for a variety of mitigation options, and it suggests that the price of energy increases more and more fossil fuel substitutes become competitive. To examine the effect of a subsidy on renewables with an upward sloping supply curve, I only consider the case where extraction costs do not depend on the remaining stock of fossil fuel reserves. With a fixed and permanent subsidy per unit of renewables produced, we get full exhaustion of fossil fuel within finite time. A higher subsidy now typically leads to later exhaustion of all reserves because there are two effects at work here. The subsidy increases the supply of renewables, but it also depresses demand for fossil fuel if the price path would remain unchanged. However, an unchanged price path would lead to fossil fuel being left in the ground at the time renewables fully take over. With constant per unit extraction cost, this is ruled out. Thus, the price path must change such that fossil fuel prices become lower, which leads to more demand for fossil fuel. However, the effect that depresses fossil fuel demand dominates, which means that there is no green paradox in this case. Dirty backstops. Some substitutes for oil and natural gas are dirty, and they are also abundant and might just be considered as a backstop. For example, coal is dirty and available in large amounts at low cost. Whereas the extraction cost of oil increases as the stock of oil reserves declines. Possibly, suppose then that the production of coal plus the social cost of carbon for coal exceeds the initial extraction cost of oil plus the social cost of carbon for oil. This means that it is optimal to start off using only oil. However, a transition to simultaneous use of oil and coal in production will have to take place at some point in time. Possibly, then there is also a final phase with coal use only. In the no policy scenario, the market economy, there will never be simultaneous use of oil and coal. If coal is then subsidized, there is an incentive to keep more oil in the ground, but the initial use of oil will increase, which is a weak green paradox. Coal is also phased in more quickly. Obviously, the coal subsidy is a bad policy from a climate perspective. In the social optimum, a lower cost of coal, for example, caused by technical progress, leads to more oil use initially and a longer period of using only oil, which means that the simultaneous phase starts later. However, this phase lasts for a shorter period of time because oil is phased out later. The long-run atmospheric CO2 concentration may decrease considerably, implying an increase in green and total welfare. Hence, in a market economy, a subsidy on a dirty backstop may have detrimental effects, whereas in an optimizing economy, a lower cost of the dirty backstop has, of course, positive welfare effects. What happens if, in addition, clean but costly renewables are considered? The social optimum, then, is to first have only oil use, then a phase with simultaneous use of oil and coal, then a phase with only coal, and finally a phase with only renewables. With this social optimum, a lower cost of renewables results in an earlier phasing out of coal, which curbs global warming. In a market economy, however, a subsidy on renewables will have no effect as long as the market price of renewables remains above the market price of coal. If, however, renewables are subsidized such that the price is slightly below the cost of coal, there will be an overall gain in welfare, as long as the renewables price is not too high relative to the price of coal. Otherwise, the subsidy for renewable energy must be very high, which would cause large distortions in the economy and therefore offsetting the gains in green welfare from the subsidy. Just 1 minute. Okay, then I will take something very interesting. Imperfect competition. If fossil fuel is supplied by a monopolist or a coherent cartel to a fossil fuel importing country, the phenomenon of limit pricing may occur. At some point in time, the monopolist will marginally undercut the price of renewables. Recently, co-authors and I have been able to identify circumstances in terms of demand functions such that a subsidy on renewables will not result in a weak green paradox, but will reverse the green paradox. Hence, the market structure for fossil fuel plays a crucial role. We have also studied the case where there are two types of fossil fuel importing countries, one country with no environmental policy and another country with a carbon tax or a subsidy on renewables. And then a higher subsidy on renewables has an ambiguous effect. It could also lead to a green paradox, but it could also reverse the green paradox. Conclusions. Well, I have shown that well-intended climate policies can have adverse consequences for two main reasons. The first occurs when countries do not levy the proper carbon tax, and they will consume more fossil fuel, which is the green paradox, and then there is also carbon leakage. I have shown that whether or not green paradoxes occur depend on the model that we are looking at. So that's an important observation. We have to be careful that green paradoxes may arise, but they do not necessarily arise. And green paradoxes, they highlight the short-run cost of second-best policies. And this is an important insight. However, I think this research on green paradox highlights the necessity of using as a first best instrument the carbon tax. And then one final remark. One thing that is missing in this literature so far is empirics. Of course, we need to know all about extraction cost functions. We need to know about demand functions, about substitutability. All this is very important. So far, there have been only very, very few empirical studies, and that is really necessary for a complete assessment of the realism of green paradoxes. Thank you.